These Days.
Kids These Days.
This is Kids These Days.
The change is something we all can see. More people, including kids, are overweight, even obese these days. In Alaska, we're often bundled up and extra weight can hide behind parkas and layers of clothes. But whether it's easy to see or not, being heavy carries risks with it. So today on the program, we're talking about Alaska's weight problem and especially how it's affecting children. Plus, learn about our state's farm to school movement. We'll talk about opportunities to keep kids moving while school's out. And also this hour, another low-calorie edition of our Chef KTD series. Stay with us for that and a lot more. Shanna Sheehy, and this is Kids These Days. Today, our topic is obesity in Alaska. As always, we care about you and what you have to say. Contribute to this conversation on our website, that's kidsthesedays.org, or find our Facebook page and comment there. I have two people joining me in the studio today to discuss this topic. Carol Fink is the program manager for the State of Alaska Obesity Prevention and Control Program. She's been a registered dietitian for almost 20 years and has a Master of Science degree in nutritional science from the University of Washington. Carol is the 2009 recipient of the Alaska Public Health Association's Barbara Berger Excellence in Public Health Award. Currently, she manages the planning, development, implementation, and administration of the state's obesity prevention plan. Thanks to you for being here, Carol.
Thank you.
And also with us today is Dr. Gary Ferguson. Dr. Ferguson serves as the Director of Wellness and Prevention at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. He's also a staff doctor at Avante Medical Center in Anchorage. He obtained his doctorate in naturopathic medicine in 2001 and has been working at in the Alaska Tribal Health System for the past 11 years. And thank you, Gary, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I've mentioned that our topic today, we're talking about obesity and being overweight in the state. We're talking about it, how it relates to our families and especially our children, since we talk a lot about kids on Kids These Days. So I think a great place to start is to start with talking about, you know, what is the picture? What are we facing in terms of rates of obesity and overweight, being overweight in our state? And, you know, maybe since you're with the state, you can start by letting us in on some of that information, Carol.
Yeah, I mean, we know that 3 out of every 10 kids in the state is either overweight or obese. And that really matches the national picture that we see. I mean, childhood obesity has tripled in the last 2 decades. It was at about 5% back in the 80s, and now it's up above 17% of kids are obese in Wow. the United States. So Alaska is really mirroring what we see nationally.
And so that's thank you for telling us about our kids. And then how do adults look in our state compared maybe with the rest of the country?
Well, compared to the rest of the country, we're right on par, and it's about the same. It's 2/3 of Alaskan adults are either overweight or obese.
Well, I'd like to share, you know, we'd like to do a lot of research before we sit down for these conversations here at Kids These Days. And from our website, kidsthesedays.org, we'll link to a whole lot of stuff that we found for this program, including a really interesting map to take a look at. It's a Save the Children Childhood Obesity Map of the United States. And it ranks each of the states along with the District of Columbia with a number for having the highest percentage of kids aged 10 to 17 who are overweight or obese, with 1 being the highest and 51 being the lowest. And so I thought I'd share that Alaska comes in at number 18 on that list, so closer to the top than the bottom. But that I'd like to share where kids are least heavy and where they're most heavy. And so Utah, it turns out, is 51st, so that's the place with the fewest kids who are overweight or obese. Colorado is just one above that at 50. And then it turns out Washington, D.C. is the place with the most highest rates of kids who are overweight or obese. And then Kentucky is the state that comes in number 2nd. I just wanted to share that and let you know that you can link to that map if you want to know more about it from kidsthesedays.org. So, Dr. Ferguson, you work with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, and you're a part of their wellness and prevention area there. So, you know, how is it that obesity and being overweight in Alaska intersects with the work that you do?
Well, when I first came back to the state after finishing my studies, I worked in the diabetes prevention arena. And one of the things that we've seen trending across the nation is a rise in diabetes, diabetes being a inability to maintain blood sugar control. Mm-hmm. And the trend among some Native people nationally is their younger ages are getting diabetes. And so when you look at Alaska, we've got relatively low rates of diabetes, but our increase in prevalence over the last 10 years has been really high. Mm. And so the opportunity for interventions and for helping to change that curve, if we were to follow the rest of the nation, is now and has been for a while. And that kind of gives a passion for a lot of the work that we do. And when you look at wellness, obesity and being heavier for your frame size, as we measure like by a body mass index or mm-hmm. a BMI, the heavier you are, the more you're at risk for certain kinds of chronic diseases, which include cancer, diabetes, heart disease. There's a host of diseases that are higher among people who are heavier. And so our goal is to, number one, is help keep people healthy and vital, regardless of what size you are, but ideally to address obesity and prevent folks from being heavy.
So you mentioned BMI, and I actually think that that's really important for us to talk about on the show, because this is where you find out, you know, where do you fall on the scale, not to be punny about it, but, you know, your body mass index is a measurement of what exactly. Can you tell us how that's measured and what we're factoring in?
Well, really, when we're talking about obesity in the general term, is it's excess of body fat, mm-hmm. and BMI is a calculation that comes from height and weight in adults, and it's a really great proxy for determining the body fat of a person. Mm-hmm. With kids, it's a little bit different. There are a couple more variables to figure out where kids fall. Kids, it's height and weight. Gender plays a role in that, as well as their age is very important to know.
Okay, so this is like if you're an average height person between 5'6 and 5'8, maybe for women, I think it's somewhere in there, and then you weigh X amount, you can take those two numbers and figure out what your BMI is?
Right, and if it's 25 or below, it's a healthy weight. Above 25 to 30 is considered overweight, and above 30 is obese. And there are many online calculators that anybody could just Google BMI calculator and be able to plug their height and weight in to find out where they fall.
I see. So, Dr. Ferguson, I wanted to go back to something that you said. You were talking about Alaska, and you're talking about chronic diseases. And you said something about diabetes and said that we actually have low incidence of diabetes in Alaska. Did I understand you correctly when you said that?
Well, lower compared nationally as far as and of course, I'm talking more tribal health system.
Okay.
You know, when you look at other comparisons to other tribes nationally, we've got a huge opportunity where our diabetes rates are lower than other tribes. And when we look at colonization and influences of Western food, technology, and less physical activity, there's a lot of factors that have played into why we have lower rates of diabetes, including protective factors in nutrition and diet, which is really compelling for us when we look at interventions and when we look at ways, how can we prevent this and how can we work with people to look at what they're eating as a preventive tool to help them with not only maintaining a healthy weight, but also to prevent diabetes and other chronic diseases.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about that. That's really interesting. So because of some of the traditional foods that are part of Alaska Native diets, this has, you believe, made it so that there's a lower incidence of diabetes among our Alaska Native peoples. Is that the case?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And Center for Alaska Native Health Research has got some really great research going on with Alaska Native people and looking at, we may have sometimes a higher BMI, but sometimes there's some protective factors with our diets.
Okay, and describe that exactly, like what a protective factor in the diet might look
like. So there was a study called the Gokinan study, which was a large cardiovascular disease study that also showed trends in diabetes. And folks in that study who consumed seal oil and salmon regularly had lower rates of diabetes and cardiovascular disease.
Wow. Wow.
So specifically, and when we think of those kinds of foods, we think of omega-3 fatty acids. We think of other kinds of they're very nutrient dense. Mm-hmm. They're low in the glycemic index, so they don't turn to sugar quickly. There's a lot of reasons why those foods. They're also, when you think of vitamin D, there's vitamin D there. There's a lot of protective factors in those foods. And the more that we study traditional diets, the more that we understand that, you know, diets high in traditional foods are very nutrient dense. And, you know, you look at the comparison, for example, for those of our native peoples, as well as others who eat seal meat as one of their foods, you know, what it would take to obtain some of the nutrition in that 1 3-ounce serving of seal meat, you know, you'd need a lot of hamburgers to get there, as well as those who consume hot dogs. It's like, you know, you need to consume a lot to get to the nutrition that you get from just a small amount of traditional foods.
Oh, wow, that's so interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, we found some great, from your website, Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, and some other places, we found some really interesting things, including, we found this calculator that helps calculate some of the values of Alaska Native traditional foods, and we'll link to that from kidsthesedays.org, as well as some of the other resources, like from your website as well. Let's talk about also, say, a rural Alaska diet, because I know from your website, on the state's website, Carol, there's some emphasis on this too, because traditional foods are something that folks who live a subsistence lifestyle have access to, but then there are stores in rural Alaska, and those stores often have foods that aren't traditional and can contribute to some weight problems. Isn't that the case?
Correct.
So, you know, what does that, can either of you kind of speak to how does a family person or any person in rural Alaska kind of make the best choices when it comes to, you know, going to the grocery store and getting the things that are great to get from the grocery store and then balancing that with a traditional diet in such a way that they can maintain a healthy weight?
Well, I'll take a first stab at that. So one of the things that we've seen over time is of course, you know, stores are awesome, you know, great for sundries and things that you can supplement your traditional foods by, and this is what we really promote is that ideally your traditional foods and foods that you hunt, fish, gather, grow is kind mm-hmm. of like our kind of saying is those are your first foods, and then the store should be your second food. And a lot of people look at communities in Alaska and small communities in particular as food deserts, which actually comes from urban settings where healthier food in stores aren't close by. You know, you have to drive to them, and if you can't drive to them, then it's a food desert because you have to live out of the 7-Eleven or the Plaid Pantry or the small, you know, gas station and convenience store.
Right.
And when we go to some villages, when you really look at what's there, depending upon what season it's in, it's you know, if folks were to just look at that as your only store, it is a food desert. It's like, wow, how am I going to be healthy here? And there's no way for me to eat healthy here. And one way that we frame that is a project that we've been working on lately called Store Outside Your Door, and basically reframing traditional activities and, you know, hunting and fishing and gathering and growing. You know, there's a lot of really great things happening with the movement to grow your own vegetables, and there's a lot you can do in the state, even in the Arctic. So really encouraging folks to reframe their community rather than a place of lack of foods, and I just can't wait to get to Anchorage or to Fairbanks to buy my foods, or to Bethel if you live in the Waikei Delta to stock up. It's like, well, you know, what season are we in, and how can I maximize the gathering of those foods? Or, you know, maybe now it's time to get the starters for the kale and the broccoli and some of those cold weather vegetables that grow really well in our environment.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea, the store outside your door. And actually, speaking of that, I'd like to remind listeners, this is Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and I'm joined today by Dr. Gary Ferguson and Carol Fink, and we're talking about obesity and how we fare with that in Alaska. And I'd like to share this now. In discussions about childhood obesity, sooner or later, the topic of school lunches seems to come up. School lunches are designed to meet federal nutrition guidelines, but plenty of parents consider them far from healthy. Lots of the ingredients are pre-processed and then shipped from the lower 48. Across the state, efforts are underway to try to get more fresh, local food incorporated into school lunches to up the health value, the taste, and the market for local food producers. Kids These Days contributor Jessica Cochran has more.
In Kathy Vick's ProStart cooking class at Chugiak High, students are working on their final project. They'll have just 1 hour to prepare a meal they plan, and the dishes will be judged against each other.
We're going to make fried chicken, mashed potatoes, and then peas and carrots. And I just thought it was kind of it's a challenging recipe to take on, because not a lot of people can make good fried chicken, like homemade. So, and potatoes go with it great, and so does peas and carrots. So that's what we decided on.
Jonathan Aho was also in Vic's class last fall, when her whole focus was on fresh, local produce. Vic received a $1,000 grant from the Alaska Farm to School program to buy local veggies, and she made the most of it.
They served a luncheon to the staff with all Alaska produce, and then we made 200 salads to hand out free to the students to try, you know, the difference between locally grown. And we did carrot sticks for the Boys and Girls Club as well as for our students here, and just went from there. And we actually handed out free Alaska-grown potatoes and carrots to 9 families that we sponsored from, November through March that needed food.
A local farmer came to speak to the students and brought veggies with him. Restaurant chefs visited to talk about what they can do with good local food. One, Chef Clayton Jones, recruited student Aho to work with him at the South Anchorage Farmers Market.
And we prepared a stand. We set up a stand for Alaskan-grown potatoes, beets, and pretty much all the fresh produce up in Alaska, carrots and everything. And his other friend Wood, who he's cooked with before. And pretty much all day long from like 7 a.m., we're just cooking potatoes, showing people, educating them. We made hash browns, and then we ended up making a pea soup, which was really good with Alaskan-grown peas. We cut up beets, like they have the different color. They have the candy cane beets and then they have the golden beets, and we showed people. Beautiful. It's beautiful.
Student Alea Allen helped promote a potato recipe developed by Vic to school nutrition workers at a statewide conference.
Okay, it's potato, Alaskan grown potatoes, and we chop them up and we use about 2 teaspoons of oil and paprika, and we season them up and we bake them. And that's pretty much it. It's a really good recipe. It's healthy and it tastes really good.
Alaska's Farm to School program is in the beginning stages of a potato project, working with Palmer potato farmers and school nutrition people to figure out recipes that would meet nutritional guidelines and if it can be cost effective. The program has already done a cabbage feasibility study in the Fairbanks area with good results. Johanna Heron runs the Farm to School program for the State Division of Agriculture.
We pilot tested the cost feasibility of utilizing local cabbage. We tested it for shrinkage during storage, yield, how much time it took to process it, how much labor that would take. And then we just ran a bunch of conservative numbers to see if purchasing the local cabbage would be cost effective for the school food service. And, you know, so that took into account labor to process. It took into account distribution from the farm and other logistical considerations. And it came out that it was actually 64 cents a pound cheaper than the pre-shred cabbage that they were currently buying. So it's very exciting.
Now the Fairbanks School District has a contract for 3 shipments of cabbage from the farmer in Delta. Another project underway is using whole grains from the Delta region to make buns for school lunches. The buns meet the new national school lunch guidelines for whole grains. When the recipe is perfected, it will be available to schools statewide and can be scaled for different sized batches. Heron says the studies are designed to make it easier for school nutrition programs to add local items. In her experience, school nutrition workers aren't lacking the desire.
I think a lot of them are very willing to try and do new things. It's just they don't typically have the means and manpower to come up with those solutions, which is what I think is one of the best things about this program, is that we're able to tackle that piece for them.
Aside from feasibility studies, the Farm to School program offers grants and mini grants like the one Kathleen Vick got. They've produced food safety guidelines for school garden projects so that locally grown food can be incorporated into luncheons. They are now taking nominations for local food heroes. Kids across the state are encouraged to nominate someone they know who uses local foods. Hunters, farmers, fishermen, and berry pickers all qualify. And they've named a Farm to School Project of the Year, Sitka's Fish in Schools program. That community effort is led by the Sitka Conservation Society. At another Sitka school, Mount Edgecombe High School, the Fish in School effort is still underway. Heidi Kritz is from the Bristol Bay area and attends Mount Edgecombe. She has started a Salmon Series newsletter to promote knowledge about the importance of salmon in Alaska, and she thinks it would make sense to eat it in the cafeteria.
All these students come to MEHS from all over Alaska, and a lot of them bring some of their native foods, but in our cafeteria, we get just regular cafeteria food. There's a healthy side and a not healthy side. And we don't get served fish or anything really healthy. So I wanted to get it in our school because I think kids would like it.
Kritz is a member of Mount Edgecumbe's chapter of Alaska Youth for Environmental Action. AYA youth around Alaska have been active in local food efforts, whether it's advocating for local food in schools or developing education programs they present to students. That education piece is key. At the local, state, and national levels, advocates say it's important for students to know where their food comes from. Kathy Vick and her student Jonathan Ayo present another reason behind the efforts.
Kids, most of them, I know they're not very excited about vegetables, but when the farmers came in with the fresh stuff picked that day, the kids were up there just, you know, can I have a whole carrot? Can I have, yeah, so it was very, very energizing to see them enthusiastic about healthy foods.
Personally, I'm not a huge fan of like vegetables and all that. Like compared to all the stuff you get in stores, all the canned and frozen, that stuff is just doesn't really have a lot of flavor to it, and it's dull looking, doesn't have like bright colors. And all the Alaskan grown, it has great colors, it tastes good, it's good to work with, and everything about it is just better.
Okay, so did it kind of bring you around on vegetables a little bit?
Yeah, I'll eat Alaskan grown stuff. I even got one of the hoodies for it now.
When healthy food tastes better, students are more likely to eat it. I'm Jessica Cochran.
And this is Kids These Days. Today, Dr. Gary Ferguson and Carol Fink join me for a discussion about obesity and maintaining a healthy weight in Alaska. I'm Shanna Sheehy. We're online at kidsthesedays.org. And Carol, I'd love to invite you to comment on that story. I imagine that you're familiar with your work through the state with the food to schools program, farm to schools program.
Yeah, it was an excellent highlight of the work that they've been doing. The farm to school program is fairly new, and they've done a tremendous amount of work in a short amount of time. And it's great to involve children and kids, students in the preparation of food, because then they understand where food comes from, how to prepare food, and they'll be better set to live a healthy life and continue to eat healthy food. I think we also love to see those examples in schools, like the Sitka Fish to School Project. When we do nutrition education in school and we talk about how important it is to eat healthy and how salmon is so good for you, they go into the cafeteria, and those messages are reinforced when we have healthy food served in the cafeteria like that. So I'm really excited about the work that Farm to School is doing and the schools that have made so much progress.
Yeah, it's interesting, that reflection of what you learn in class. If you go into your lunchroom and if you see nothing like the things that you learned were healthy, what kind of a message is that? It's an interesting idea. And Dr. Ferguson, how about you? It was a fun story, and it was interesting to me to hear the kids feel, you know, the ones who got excited about the food were really excited and seemed somehow very connected to it.
Well, it's one of those where when you're closely connected to food, where it comes from, and, you know, growing it or gathering it or being a part of that whole food system, you know, it makes a lot more sense to you about the value of that food and what it means to you. And, you know, from a traditional perspective, all of us come from traditional backgrounds. Whether you're native or not, we all have traditional foods or local foods that we grew up eating. And, you know, how did we learn about those foods, and how did we be engaged around the value of those foods? And, you know, how can we have our new youth in this new generation be engaged with that system? And I think having them be included in schools, I mean, it's a no-brainer. And I think what Farms to Schools is doing, and Fish to Schools, like in the school district and out in the Bristol Bay area as well, they're modeling the way for all of our school systems to say, well, what can we do to have these local and traditional and customary foods be a part of our children's lunch and breakfast programs.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, connecting with food, I want to ask you, Carol Fink, you know, it's my belief, and I don't know if I'm right about it or not, but it's my belief that sometimes people, especially people who maybe need to make some changes, don't always know
what it means when you say you got to eat healthy. You need to make healthy choices when you eat. And I'm wondering, you know, how does someone who wants to and can benefit from learning about what healthy meal looks like and what regular healthy eating looks like, how does someone get that information, and can you share some of it with us today?
Yeah, and I have a great example of people not knowing what it means to eat healthy. A friend of mine's an ER doc, and he had a patient come in recently whose sugar was really high. They had diabetes, and it was out of control. And they were sitting in the patient room with a sugar drink in their hand, wondering why they felt so terrible and why their sugars were out of control. And somehow they had missed the message that sugar drinks, such as soda pop or an energy drink or even juice, has sugar in it, and it impacts your blood sugar. So we hope that kids get good nutrition information at school, that our schools are teaching them nutrition. Also needs to be happening at home. Parents talking about what good nutrition is. And we also need, as I mentioned earlier, we need to reinforce those messages. So if our schools are talking about what good nutrition looks like, when the kid leaves the classroom and goes down to the cafeteria, those foods that are served there should reinforce the message that they heard in their health class. Nutrition's a very large topic about what you should do. And if there was one message that I'd give to Alaskans, is to not drink sugar drinks and just drink water. And when I say sugar drinks, I'm really including juice with that as well. We just know that there's really no nutritional value in either of those drinks, and it's just a lot of extra calories. But there's so many nutrition messages that I could give, but the one key one I would say is stay away from sugar drinks.
And that's one recommendation that definitely stands out on the Division of Public Health website as it relates to obesity prevention. And I found the statistic there as well, that according to the state, 50% of Alaska high school students report, oops, that's the wrong one, sorry, here it is, 47% of Alaskan adults drink at least one sugar-sweetened beverage a day. And that's as of 2009. So that's like at least half of us, almost nearly half of us, are drinking one sweetened beverage a day. And I wonder, do you happen to know, you know, do kids kind of fall on that same amount? You know, do that same percentage of kids drink soda, or maybe more? Or what
nationally, the average amount of calories that kids get from sugar drinks is 116 calories from a sugared beverage every day. And if you know how to do the math to figure out what that equivalent is in pounds, at the end of a year, it's an extra 12 pounds of weight just from sugared beverages.
Now, this is 12 pounds of weight, meaning that they would be putting on their
putting
bodies?
Putting on just from that extra 116 calories each day they're getting from a sugar drink.
Wow. Well, this is great information. We'll pick up the conversation about what is good nutrition as soon as we come back from a quick break. This is Kids These Days. We're talking about raising Alaska's future today on the show. This program is a production of the Content Producers Guild, an Alaska organization that supports independent media makers. Kids These Days is distributed by the Alaska Public Radio Network, and we record our program in the studios of KSKA-FM in Anchorage. We thank those partners for their ongoing support. Thanks to you, too. Hello in Juneau, Dillingham, Kodiak, Chivac, Skagway, Haines, and Klukwan. Hello, Matt, Sue, Unalaska, and Anchorage, too. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and Dr. Gary Ferguson and Carol Fink and I will continue this conversation about obesity in Alaska after we're back in just a quick minute. And let your spine unwind. Just take a risk. I wanna do the break, do the break, break now. Tell me, party people, is that so warm? The ship is rocking, interlocking, and I'm rocking, electroshocking. We're getting down, computer action, to the robotic satisfaction. All yours, get off the floor, have a ball, and get involved with. Many of us remember that special teacher in our lives, the one who believed in us, connected with us, made a lasting impression on us. Next time on Kids These Days, we celebrate our teachers and show them a little love. We ask you whom you remember most in the classroom and why, and we explore the future of teaching and how the profession might change. Join us for that and more next time. We're back. This is Kids These Days. I'm your host, Shanna Sheehy. Today on the program, we're talking about obesity in Alaska and discussing how it affects us, both young and old. Join us by telling us what you think. Comment right on our website, that's kidstheseDays.org, or find us through Facebook and do it there. Today I'm speaking with Carol Fink. She works for the state of Alaska. She's the Obesity Prevention and Control Program Manager there. And also Dr. Gary Ferguson, who is a practitioner at Avante Medical Center in Anchorage, and also the Director of Wellness and Prevention at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. So before the break, if you could pick one recommendation for how to advise caregivers to help themselves and their families be healthy, it was to eliminate sugar, drinks, sodas, juices, and stuff like that. So Dr. Ferguson, I wanted to ask you about that same idea about sugar drinks and ask you about it from a rural Alaskan perspective. And part of the reason why I want to ask this question is because my husband is an airline pilot for a regional airline, and I've heard him talk about when he flies to rural communities, he'll talk about the stress on his back when he unloads the soda that goes out to rural communities. And so I'm wondering, is this a problem that's in any difference in rural Alaska than it might be in urban Alaska with soda consumption specifically?
Well, you travel to rural Alaska, and those of you tuning in from our small communities, you know, when you go to your store, there's often a whole aisle devoted to soda and to energy drinks. And
energy drinks.
Yeah,
too.
And that's a big deal. And I think some people don't think an energy drink is a soda, and it's often jam packed with not only sugar but a lot of things that may actually cause children to have their attentions wander. I would say definitely monitor the energy drinks your children are drinking every day.
They're also huge.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know how many ounces are in those, but when I see those cans, they're enormous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and it's one of those where, you know, I'm all about balance. And, you know, sometimes if you can get to, maybe you're saying you're drinking 4 sugar-sweetened beverages a day, sometimes just reducing that by 1 and then slowly but surely getting yourself to where, you know, maybe you're down to 1 sugar-sweetened beverage a day, that's going to make a significant difference in your likelihood of being heavier than you should be. And with our kids in rural Alaska, you know, soda pop, a lot of it's people say, you know, the water doesn't taste good. That is an issue. It's a valid issue. And I think looking at ways as simple as buying a Brita water filter and having better tasting water at home is a really simple way. They're inexpensive, and you can have it at your home. You can have it in your classroom for encouraging water if the faucet in your school isn't necessarily the best tasting water. And then maybe having a recyclable water container is another really great idea so that kids can refill those water containers. And, you know, there's a lot of great ways to encourage water consumption versus soda pop consumption. But you're right, in our villages, you know, you talk to pilots and people work for airlines, and there are plane loads going into villages loaded with soda pop. And it's a big deal. And I think local ownership around that issue is really important, and empowering schools and elders, community members, and villages to understand the issue and then come up with local solutions that encourage water consumption versus soda pop.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Ferguson, in the first half of the show, you talked about, and both of you actually talked about, some of the chronic diseases that can result from obesity and being overweight, but specifically obesity. And it's true that more and more of the time, younger and younger people are starting to experience these chronic, and what, you know, that means lifetime conditions. And so one of those that is being seen with more frequency in younger kids is diabetes. This is type 2 diabetes. It used to be called adult onset diabetes, but now that phraseology is changing because we're seeing it in children. So I want to talk about childhood diabetes because I think that's an important part of this discussion. So Carol Fink, you know, what do caregivers need to know about type 2 diabetes as they're raising their kids? You know, what should they be looking for? What, you know, what are some of the symptoms, and how is someone going to pick up that a kid's in need of some treatment? Or, you know, is getting to the point where they need to make some changes to avoid it, so prevention.
Right. Well, I would come back to the prevention side of that, and avoiding obesity in the first place would help prevent diabetes. Mm-hmm. So those are the types of issues that I work on when I'm thinking about our population's health. How can I help families not get to the point where their kid is obese and then diagnosed with diabetes? So I'll let Dr. Ferguson address the diabetes care issue.
Okay.
Well, I mean, again, just as Carol pointed out, making sure that children are physically active and are at healthier weights. I mean, that's the most important take-home message. There are warning signs of type 2 diabetes, and most often it's as far as like type 2 diabetes rather than type 1, which is a child onset diabetes that's related to actual your pancreas doesn't function as it should, and so you don't have insulin. It's very different from type 2 diabetes, which is often related to obesity as well as lifestyle factors. So, you know, when you look at type 2 diabetes as it presents in children, number one, children most often with type 2 diabetes have a weight issue. There's also a darkening of skin folds, and you'll see that in around the neck area as well as the axillary area or underneath your arms. Mm. Those are some warning signs, and for families or parents who may be concerned about their children, that's something to talk to your provider when you meet with them, whether it be a community health aide or a nurse if you live in a village, or your family physician. You know, that darkening of the skin can be an indicator of poor blood sugar control, as well as maybe high insulin levels, which is your body's attempt to try to deal with the blood sugar control. Mm-hmm. Those factors are things, and I think regular checkups, bringing your child in for regular checkups and wellness visits, so that you can talk about ways that you can address issues and motivate your children. I think a lot of our children are faced with the challenge today where, you know, they're in technology and a lot of things that keep them sitting for long periods of time. And we know studies show that children need to move and hours per day, you know, not just 30 minutes, but hours per day. And, you know, that's why I'm a big fan of, like, you know, get them outside, you know, right. Hunt, fish, gather, grow. I mean, how are we engaged in being outside and having fun outside? Even in our more inclement climates, as far as the further north you go, the longer the winter, and it can be vigorous. We come up with creative ways, and there are ways that generations, thousands of years of people have stayed healthy in those environments and stayed physically active and ate whole food, nutrient-dense foods,
Well, it's a huge and important part of this discussion is to talk about exercise, to talk about prevention. But before we finish the part about juvenile diabetes or type 2 diabetes in young people, I wanted to also mention something that I found when I was reading about this topic. It turns out that type 2 diabetes progresses faster in kids and is harder to treat. This is something that the doctors are finding. And it's not exactly known why, but it's suspected that because kids are growing rapidly and that there are also hormonal changes that happen during adolescence, that plays a part. But just for an example, the oral medication that diabetics can take is not nearly as effective in teenagers mm-hmm. than that it is in adult populations. So it seems like, you know, it's very, very crucial, this prevention piece, because if you're getting diabetes young in your life and then you're progressing through the disease even more quickly, and then you have a longer period of your life where you'll be living with it, you know, all the more reason that prevention is so important. And I didn't know if maybe you wanted to comment on, you know, what we're discovering when it comes to what's happening when kids are living with this at earlier and earlier
ages.
Well,
that's a perfect point, because this is the first generation of children that we think might not have as long a life expectancy as their parents' generation, and it is due to diabetes and chronic
specifically to diabetes
because it's fueling these epidemics of heart disease, diabetes, stroke, wow. and some cancers.
And that's huge. That's huge change.
And it's one of those where the number one cause of blindness is related to diabetes when you look at things that are preventable. Mm-hmm. And kidney malfunction as far as like kidney dialysis and renal dialysis, that's the long-term side effects of diabetes. And the younger you get diabetes, the more likely that you'll face those kinds of conditions earlier on in your life. And some of our people are actually facing some of the chronic disease complications to diabetes in their 30s and 40s. And that's where, you know, I think the huge opportunity when we're young. The old way of thinking was, you know, my child's just, you know, they're going to grow out of it. You know, these other kinds of conversations that we'd have. And we're not as physically active as we used to be. And our children, if they're showing signs where they're heavier than they should be for that stage of their development, and we don't want to talk about dieting or having unhealthy body images, but we want to encourage protective factors, you know, mm-hmm. a healthy diet, mm-hmm. less sugar sweetened beverages, mm-hmm. physical activity daily, and then reducing other factors such as stress. Stress is a huge factor when you look at eating behavior and coping mechanisms, as well as other hormones in your body when you're stressed out all the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, getting your sleep is a huge way to not be stressed. You know, your body interprets lack of sleep as stress. Mm-hmm. And so children today, you know, they're going to bed at midnight and they've got school first thing in the morning. That's not enough rest for the day. And there's a lot of great studies that show the more sleep you get or the more regular sleep you get, the less that you have weight issues. And vice versa, if you don't get your sleep, your likelihood for being obese or having challenges with weight go way up.
Mm-hmm. And we know that kids aren't growing out of it. 70% of obese kids become obese adults. And so that's why we at the state feel like childhood obesity prevention is the key, is if kids aren't obese, they won't become obese adults. And then we will be able to deal with these health issues. Another thing that hasn't been brought up today, though, is how expensive it is to treat those chronic conditions. And it's not just, you know, your private insurance paying for it. The public pays for it because a lot of people are using our Medicaid and our Medicare services. And so we spend $459 million a year on obesity-related medical costs. And 25% of that is public dollars in Medicaid.
Wow, that's significant. Well, as we transition into the conversation where we talk about prevention, let me remind listeners that this is Kids These Days. Today, our conversation is about obesity in Alaska. I'm speaking with Dr. Gary Ferguson and Carol Fink today. And let's take a listen to this. Your kids may have brought home exercise logs at some point during this last school year. Students from all over the state were recording how much exercise they got each week and then turning in their progress in exchange for prizes. It's all part of the Healthy Futures program. And although the school year is nearly over, we found out that the folks there plan to stay active all summer long. Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez recently spoke with Healthy Futures program director Cindy Norquist.
Cindy Norquist, thank you so much for joining us on Kids These Days.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So as the program director of Healthy Futures, tell us about your program. How did it start? And how long have you been active, so to speak, in Alaska?
Okay. We actually started about 8 years ago, and it was the brainchild of Bonnie Sosa Young, who has since passed, unfortunately. But what she saw was that there were a lot of community events, but there weren't a lot of kids participating. And she was a parent herself, and she was concerned that kids weren't getting the message that being active was healthy for them. And she wanted to make a difference. Her mantra was, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
Okay. So Healthy Futures is a statewide program, and you have two main goals. One is the activity logs, which I'm sure some parents will probably be familiar with seeing at home. And then the other one is the community events, getting more kids to come. Explain that twofold sort of purpose that you have.
Okay. Our mission is to empower Alaska youth to build that habit of daily physical activity into their lives. And we do that through the activity logs, which is basically a 3-month challenge offered through the schools where kids win incentives. Actually, they don't win them. They earn the incentives for being physically active. And they document their physical activity each day. And after a period of 4 weeks, they turn in the activity log to receive an incentive. In addition to that, we wanted kids to start participating in community events. There's so many benefits to that. Not only will they, you know, be more physically active, but they're more engaged in their communities when they're part of the community and feel like they're part of the community. So we add the fun factor, if you will, to community events. We have 42 community events throughout the state of Alaska. And we offer race bibs and medals and celebrities and advertising the events. We want kids to come to events and have fun. Our focus is not on the first child that crosses the finish line. Our focus is really on that last child. We want them to have an experience so that they felt like a winner, so they keep coming back.
Cindy, I know that parents who are active themselves, they're more likely to participate in physical activity with their kids. Those people maybe aren't as difficult to bring into this sort of a program. How do you do outreach to, like, more at-risk youth?
We have a couple different ways. One project that I'm really excited about and hoping that we can expand upon is a project we're doing at Tyson Elementary, which is a low-income school. It is a Title I school. And we're going in at recess time and we're playing with the kids. We have a little running group and we're bringing positive adult role models from the community in to meet with the kids and run with the kids. And, you know, people might think that that's not going to make a difference. But one parent there who, you know, has a weight issue herself said her child now, because of the activity log and the recess, is coming to her telling her, we need to walk today. So it's, you know, when you get the message to the kids, the parents will often follow.
And this is called the Get Active Recess
Initiative.
So, I mean, that is so ironic that there's recess and kids aren't running around. So, there's really a need for them to move.
There is. And it's, you know, it's not just about childhood obesity. It's about academic performance, you know, social and emotional learning. When kids are physically active, they do better academically. They also do better socially.
So these Get Active logs are 30 minutes a day.
Three times per week for four consecutive weeks. And we offer them both in the fall semester as well as the spring semester. And it's for 3 months.
Okay. And then that 30 minutes a day is exclusive of
PE.
Of PE. Okay. Any other sorts of school-related physical activity?
Yeah. What we want to do is we want to empower the kids. And if you are forced to do something, that's not empowering you. But if you're encouraged to do it and you start doing it on your own, it starts building that, hey, this is a great thing. I feel better when I do this, so I want to continue.
Yeah. And it's just something that they'll sort of learn and carry on into adulthood, I'm sure is the goal.
That's our goal.
So the school year is coming to an end, as we know. What do you have going on this summer?
During the summer, it's primarily the community events. And for instance, up in Fairbanks, we have the Mukluk mud race. And, you know, just to show you an example of how you can have fun and it's not just about being the fastest, is they're actually giving prizes for who comes out the dirtiest.
That's perfect.
And, you know, if parents are looking for events, what they can do is they can actually go onto our website, which is healthyfuturesak.org. And we have a Google Calendar up there, so you can look at the events and find an event in your community. And we also offer scholarships to the community events that we support. Because let's face it, some of those events, they're expensive for families to participate in.
Okay, and they can find all that out on your website. So last question for you. What sorts of results have you been seeing as your time being the program manager of Healthy Futures Alaska?
You know, we're not research-driven, so the results that I get are anecdotal. But I had one child that the parent emailed me and said, my child, because of Healthy Futures, made the decision for one day to go without a soda. That then increased to 1 week. That then increased to 1 month. And eventually the child went for 1 year without having a soda. And so, you know, you hear these stories. I see it in my own children. My daughter wasn't into doing activities like running, et cetera. And now she does the Tuesday night races and she's upset if we don't go. So, you know, the results are coming in anecdotally that kids are being more active. As far as the recess, the Get Active recess, what we're finding is there's less referrals to the principal's office. In fact, during the days that we've been at Tyson Elementary, there have been no referrals during recess time. whereas in the past they had significant number of kids that had to do wall time because of, you know, bad behavior.
So they're staying busy and keeping out of trouble.
They're staying busy, they're keeping out of trouble, and most importantly, they're having fun.
That's great. Cindy Norquist, thank you so much for joining us on Kids These Days.
Thank you.
Jog on over to kidsthesedays.org to connect to Healthy Futures and a schedule of their statewide summer exercise program for kids. This is Kids These Days. Dr. Gary Ferguson and Carol Fink are here with me today talking about obesity in Alaska and staying healthy. I'm Shanna Sheehy. So this is the time that we get to talk about exercise and other strategies for prevention, and I'm excited to do that. And Carol Fink, you mentioned earlier in this half of the show that this is really, you know, what your focus is. So maybe we can start with you by telling us about some of the strategies for prevention that are important parts of the state program.
Yes, and Healthy Futures is part of the state program. We're a partner of theirs, and they are a partner of ours. We work together to expand the program this year. This year, we had 110 schools participate in Healthy Futures. It represents over 6,000 students in the state, and we've had a really great response from our teachers and the kids that have participated, telling us great stories about how the kids have started to build the habit of physical activity. I do want to mention that the physical activity recommendation for children and youth is 60 minutes every day. The Healthy Futures log is 30 minutes three or four times a week to get a prize. Mm-hmm. And really what that's just building on is building that habit, mm-hmm. but the real recommendation is 60 minutes every day. Kids should be active.
And I should break in to mention that we will link to that, to the guidelines by the CDC from kidsthesedays.org. And on that website, it's pretty interesting. They do some things like, for example, they'll take a grade school age boy and then show you a breakdown for 7 days of how that child added up to an hour and several different installments, different kinds of activities that he did in order to reach that 60-minute mark. I thought it was a great way to show caretakers what that might look like instead of saying, okay, go out and run for an hour or something.
Right. And I think a lot of parents think their kids are getting physical activity, one at recess and then through PE. But we know in the state that kids aren't getting as much physical activity as they need through their physical education program. Physical education is really important to build those skills so that when kids do go out to be physically active, they know how to be physically active. And in the state of Alaska, we do not have any mandate for physical education in elementary schools.
And I think that that's actually pretty common. We also found that there's only 5 states, this is according to a Shape of the Nation report that we'll link to as well, only 5 states require physical education in every grade of K through 12. So I guess it's not uncommon, but Alaska doesn't have those standards, it sounds like.
Yeah, for elementary, we don't have any whatsoever. So when schools are providing physical education, that's great, but there is no mandate to do that. And often when you see budget cuts, physical education along with arts and music are what get looked at. And we know, as Cindy mentioned in that piece, that kids who are physically active perform better in school. Mm-hmm. There's better academic performance, less referrals to the principal's office. And so we need to consider a balance when we're looking at physical education in schools, that it is important for academic performance.
Absolutely. So you know, how about Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium? What kind of prevention, you know, what work are you all doing on the prevention end of things?
Well, through a variety of programs, our diabetes prevention program works with a lot of diabetes grantees, a special diabetes program for Indians grantees statewide, which is run through our tribal health entities in local areas throughout the state. From encouraging physical activity through pedometer programs. And I think sometimes people think physical activity you need to be doing aerobics or doing something that's ultra vigorous. And a lot of the studies show just simple walking, getting outside and walking and being physical active that way does a lot to reduce your risks for obesity, as well as, I mean, you can really have a significant difference if you just get in your 2,000 steps a day. So I'm a big fan of like simple pedometer programs. They're real inexpensive for schools or families. You know, sometimes you can get some pedometers for you and your children and have some competitions.
Just in case somebody doesn't know, it's just like a little mechanism that you put it on your body and it counts your steps, right? That you take throughout the day?
Yep. And they're super super inexpensive, and you know, they can be a lot of fun.
Okay, so
our diabetes programs are doing a lot of work in the tribal health system, and I'm a big fan of like looking at what you're eating every single day. And Carol brought up a really great point around sugar sweetened beverages, and you know, looking at you know, even the simple reduction of one less sugar sweetened beverage a day can turn into 10 to 12 pounds of weight loss in a year.
Wow.
So simple. I mean, very simple. And, you know, for those of us who are consuming more than one per day, you know, just giving up one of those per day, you'll lose 10 pounds on average in 1 year if you give that up. And, you know, so I think, you know, looking at a lot of the messaging with our programs is small steps, big rewards, because, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot of change to see the effect. You know, when you're even physically active for 15 minutes extra per day, you feel better, you have more energy, you sleep better. And kids really respond to physical activity even more so than us adults. You know, you have a better attention span, you're more focused, you know, you're able to process things better. You know, you're able to use your body as a way to proactively deal with the emotions. As our children age, you know, we go through some very sometimes challenging times, and being physically active helps us on a lot of different metabolic processes, ways to process that. Mm-hmm. So.
And, you know, speaking of that, about active children being able to focus and other good outcomes from that, I know research has recently also found through magnetic resonance imaging that active children actually have bigger parts of certain parts of their brain than children who are inactive. And that's contributing in some ways, obviously. Mm-hmm. So let's keep on kids, little kids, and we only have enough time probably to ask this one last question. I wanted to mention a couple of statistics from the Department of Health and Social Services about obesity for little kids. 40% of kids enrolled in the Women, Infants, and Children program are above normal weight in Alaska. 32% of kids entering the Anchorage School District in kindergarten and first grade are above normal weight. And 58% of two-year-olds in the northern and southwestern regions, again, consume, we're talking about sweetened beverages, each day they consume at least one sweetened beverage, and that's compared with 20% of kids who are in other parts of the state. So Carol, I wanted to ask you specifically, when we're talking about little kids, there is a link, if I understand it correctly, between breastfeeding and the chances of a child becoming obese. Is that the case?
Yeah, breastfeeding is what we'd consider a protective factor.
Okay.
And breastfeeding has to be initiated, you know, and then it has to be sustained to really get the effects of or the benefits to help prevent obesity. There are also thoughts that, you know, mothers who breastfeed are really making an effort to get their kids healthy, and they may also give them better habits as they grow older as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to thank both of you so much for your time today. It's really been a pleasure to speak with you. Carol Fink is the program manager for the Obesity Prevention and Control Program with the State of Alaska's Division of Public Health. And Dr. Gary Ferguson is a naturopathic doctor and the director of wellness and prevention for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. Thank you both for being with us this hour.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks. It was awesome to be here.
As always, we'll connect you to the workplaces of today's guests, as well as other resources and reports we talked about during our discussion today. It's a true treasure trove of information from this hour of radio. You can find all of that right now on our website. That's kidsthesedays.org. That's it for Kids These Days today. Make sure you go to kidsthesedays.org to find our healthy cheesecake for kids recipe by Chef KTD's Liz Madsen. Sarah Gonzalez put that together for our show today as well. Jessica Cochran is our regular contributor. Sarah Gonzalez is our producer, business manager, and online content editor. Dave Waldron of the Alaska Public Radio Network regularly offers his help in engineering. Lost Lander provides us with our original music pieces. I'm Shannon Sheehy. Thanks for being with me today, and I'll see you next time.
Kids These Days is an independent production of the Content Producers Guild. The opinions shared on the program are those of the host, guest, and contributors, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KTD producers, partners, or funders. Major funding for Kids These Days comes from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. The program is made in partnership with KSKA-FM in Anchorage and the Alaska Public Radio Network. Find out more about Kids These Days anytime at kidsthesedays.org.